morning and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophy in Philadelphia. A few announcements we have to bring forward. One that we wanted to start off with for you to notice that the June and July Theosophical, what's the last month?
Independence
is now available for anyone who wants to pick them up. And of course, most of us here are all aware of Sunday morning's talks or lectures. And this summer session, we have been doing a study from a sessions of articles from Magazine Theosophy. And it's called the Studying the Individuality and the Personality. And all our talks on Sundays start promptly at 11 and they're over at 12 noon. Next Sunday, we will be continuing the second part of what we're going to be discussing today with the approach to self-consciousness, part two. Today we'll be doing, of course, part one. Then on Wednesday evenings from 7:45 to 9 p.m., we have our study class. During the summer, we have been studying the Gita. We are coming up on chapter 14, and the discussion will be on three kinds of faith.
You passed that.
That
was last
week. Oh. So we weren't here last week. So are we doing last week? Three kinds of faith. The three kinds of faith, and it is chapter 14. Also on Wednesday evening, our reference library is open from 5:30 to 7:30, just prior to our study class. There's always someone available there if you have any things that you want to look up or not look up. But it's quite a vast, rounded library. And then, as we were stating with the meetings, we will be, our programs for the fall start in October. So for everyone that has their little bulletin, they'll notice the last dates of summer session will be through the rest of the month of September, and then we start our fall session. And at this point, those should be out before the end of this month comes around. Now, as we were also thinking, we made a mistake when we said we weren't here last week. We were speaking about the interruption last Sunday of our hurricane lady, Irene. So due to complications, we're just going to briefly go over the discussion that was started on that day, since we missed it. But most everybody who doesn't have a copy of last week's, which was August 28th, we have extra copies if you wish. And that was, again, the beginninghood of the perfected man, part two. And we just wanted to bring out a couple statements that were made that'll tie in with what we're going to be doing today. Are just a reminder that there's a spiritual, a psychic, an intellectual, and an animal evolution from the highest to the lowest, as well as a physical development. From the simple homogeneous up to the most complex and heterogeneous, so that we understand it's not just one type of development, it's many in that course of it is. And as we were, this whole beginning was dealing with the idea of that, of the monad. And as it states, you know, while that monad is circling downward into matter, there are the higher and the lowers of the Petries, and they are called the Diana Shohans. They're also developing on a higher level, more of a spiritual plane than ours. And also connected with that is also our globe. So when we're getting to the point that we're getting to now, with the separation, the duality within the human, being that of an individuality, part of our nature, and the personality part of our nature, so that we understand, one, the individuality we will understand is something that is permanent, that's ongoing, that's always there, versus the idea of that we are caught up, which we think we are, the personality, which is really a temporary thing for this lifetime. This personality in toto will never appear again in this whole vast period of evolution. There will be essence and certain parts of the personality that will be carried on, but not the whole in total. So again, it's a temporary thing. So in basically, when we go into this, if we keep that in mind, we can also keep in mind, if you had a choice between something that was temporary and something that was ongoing, ever developing, ever growing, what would you want to put all your interest and your time and energy in? And that's where we come to the idea of the individuality. So today, we're starting with the mystery of individuality, the approach to self-consciousness, number one. We will have student do a synopsis of this, and then we will have a time period for questions and answers.
Stated, the mystery of individuality, the approach to self-consciousness. We will highlight the part, try to pick out those ideas which cover the subject, but then again, if there are any questions afterwards, you can address them to the chair. Every atom becomes a visible complex unit, a molecule. And once attracted into the sphere of terrestrial activity, the monadic essence passing through the mineral, vegetable, and animal kingdoms becomes man. The pathway to self-consciousness cannot be conceived correctly as an obvious straight line passage through the kingdom. Consider, for example, the mineral kingdom. That kingdom is not confined to rocks, liquids, and gases. Whatever we see with physical sight, vegetation, animals, insects, or human bodies, belongs to the mineral kingdom. Resolve these forms to their natural constituents, and nothing remains, physically speaking, but so-called inorganic matter. Now, just as mineral activity is not confined to the kingdom of that name, so the vegetable or cellular kingdom is not limited to expression as plant life. It also cycles through the kingdoms, wherever cellular life is to be found, never returning below the vegetable state proper. Of course, and as much as too much has been learned to permit its return to lower forms. Owing to varied experience in taking part in organic life throughout the lower forms, taking part in organic life throughout the higher kingdoms, these centers also become loaded with impressions and memories. And when sufficient intelligence has been awakened, eventually find themselves operating in a higher state, that of animal consciousness. One more principle is awake. If we review, or if we view, rather, each atom as a certain rate of vibration, united everywhere with all other atoms of the same vibration, and forming a layer of consciousness working in that state of matter, the intelligence and experience of one being shared by the whole, it is easy to comprehend that when units learn to vibrate in higher ways, owing to contact with an impulsion from above, they enter new layers or streams of consciousness. Thus, they eventually become molecular, cellular, organic, in the sense of being able to be the synthesizing consciousness behind a whole organism, human elements, and finally, human beings. Of course, it should always be understood that of themselves, atoms, plants, and animals would forever remain as they are. It is the contact with higher beings that arouses them to imitate. Memory and intelligence in nature is thus endless repetition of creative impulses imparted by higher beings in this or former periods of evolution. In summation of this phase of the discussion, the following valuable observation is taken from Theosophical Movement 23. Well, someday all of this which we now call dust will become sensitized matter and stay that way. It won't slip back. All this that we now call the sensitized matter, which makes up our nature, physical and metaphysical, will someday become self-conscious, be able to act of its own will, as we act of our own will. Every use of our will makes an impression on them. And if the will is strong enough, if the repetition is frequent enough, after a while, that dumb flesh begins to be able to act of its own will. Someday then, those impressions will become self-germinated. And behold, we have a new thinker. That's why it is that the flesh of our bodies and the life in the mineral kingdom will someday become self-conscious thinkers. And it refers to the Ocean of Theosophy, page 62. Thank you.
So we can see there is a building of approaching self-consciousness through those four lower kingdoms, the first, the second, and third, and then the fourth of a mixture getting into the human form, which is more on the first page. For instance, that whole idea of the mineral, the knowing to the cohesion, to stick together, with that. And then we get in the vegetable kingdom as far as consciousness, not self-consciousness, but some sort of intelligence, some sort of consciousness in the unit, is that of sensation and observation. It, the vegetable kingdom does observe and it does partake of movement. So it has observation within it. And sensitivity to light, as we know, light, darkness, dry soil, wet soil, okay? And then that brings us with those, that combination of one and two. And then we get to the animal kingdom, well, we are aware of there's natural instinct. It instinctually knows what to do as far as getting food, having a, you know, raising a family, being part of either a group or a loner, but there is instinct in there. And then when we get to the closeness where we talk about the physical part of man, that of that astral, the framework for the physical, that of prana, the life principle that goes through everything, and also when we come in, watch, you know, watching these things develop, and we come with the prana and the kama, which is that desire principle. So we can see a development of some sort of consciousness getting to the point where something can use the form of the human body form. Yes?
Well, we got the idea first of a directional movement from, and in the teachings we hear the phrase from without within, and then from within outward. So there seems to be a double movement, a motion involved in this.
Well, our understanding is that within to without is what is developed in all these degrees coming up to the physical body. The effects from outside are not, it's not that I'm saying it's not that important, it's that it's not, shall we say, available. And even the mineral, it is innate knowing cohesion. That's from within the mineral kingdom. Yes?
Well, perhaps the idea was mentioned because natural impulse or instinct is the intelligence in that kingdom responding to something from without, which is a directive from higher mind, which is
on
for
that
kingdom. And if you take it all the way to the human, in a way we could say there is a without involved, because you have the form that has been developed, but then you have to have the incarnation of a spiritual being in order to fuse it and have the thinker present. So it's an obscure way of saying it, but it is some without is within.
And as we said, so that we can understand just the development, the time, and keep in mind, for those of us who were here and have studied the ocean, where we are in our period of evolving and development, there were three prior races developing that were not as physical in form as we see now. So we're talking vast, vast periods of time of perfecting vehicles in each situation. And for the mind thinker to enter into the physical form, there had to be a development made, and the time just working on the physical form was quite a long time. When that thinker entered into the form. And again, we must keep in mind, everything that we can see, in a way, it's from one basic source, but each thing, there's spirit and matter. It's one thing. Let's look at it as the opposite ends of the pole. It's spirit and matter. That duality now comes in to our individuality. The individuality is coming into the form. Yes?
It's the third from the end paragraph. If we view each atom as a certain rate of vibration.
Ah, yes.
When we talk about how nature, without the influence of man, fails, can we say then that this particular, when they're talking about the vibration, and it says here, it is easy to comprehend that when units learn to vibrate in higher ways, owing to contact with an impulsion from above, mm-hmm. is that what we're talking about? Is that if we don't impress the lower kingdoms with higher vibrations?
You're a little too far ahead. What is
it
on this?
It always comes back to that one phrase, nature unaided fails, and it is meant only at the development of the human form. In other words, those without consciousness, self-consciousness, couldn't give self-consciousness. So nature kept trying to make this perfect human, and it says nature unaided fails. Higher beings had to step in and become part of it. Nature on Earth can never fail. It only acts in reaction. So if we make a total mess of the Earth did exactly what it was supposed to do. It followed our impression. So we mustn't think that nature fails. We fail. Nature can't fail.
And it does state if we, in the philosophy, all the different things, the earthquakes, the tornadoes, the volcanoes erupting, that all comes, when you think about it, we can express those mentally through our thinking. And we've all gone through phases where we were like a volcano, where we were like a tornado, or, you know, or like a hurricane. We have the same type of motion within also, and it's our motion that makes uneven balance. Because nature, in a way, knows harmony and balance. It's when we interfere sometimes, like cutting down vast forests and taking the ecosystem way out of whack, is when the imbalance comes. And those effects that we get back from nature and this planet are effects that we had our hands in at one time or another as thinking human beings. Yes.
Then it's in a cooperative effort, it seems.
It should be a cooperative effort, yes.
When there is disharmony anywhere in the vast whole, it is corrected by the adjustment made at the level where the unevenness occurred. It would appear that we have to look for examples of that in our daily lives to really understand that unity of effort is cooperative in spite of what we personally may think.
And it would make a lot of sense because down through the ages we've been through, you know, we're in the darkest age right now, the Kali Yuga, but it's also the shortest age. We've been through the gold and the silver, the bronze. There was a period when everything on this planet was in tune with each other, and we've worked our way down. Now, the only benefit of being in the dark age and it being the shortest, it's also the quickest. And this is the one that we could make more progress in than any of the other ages, which were much longer in length, and the time was not as hectic as it is now. So there is that possibility that we can help improve the whole system if we had the knowledge to know how to work with it. Yes.
Then you're saying that it's a self-corrective.
It's a what?
Self-corrective system. And we tend to say things like bad karma, good karma, and so forth, when in reality, it's simply a correction of disharmony. But we personally take it as something, pain, pleasure, and so forth.
Which we have a tendency to do of just looking on our own little perimeter. It's global, it's planetary, it's universal. There should be some sort of harmony that exists. But until the time of one gets unbalanced, it takes time for it to learn to rebalance again. So a lot of it does concern us as human thinking beings, how we affect the world we live in. Yes.
Well, nature is self-corrective, but only to a point. If you poison a stream completely, no matter how hard it tries, it can't restore it. But the human is only self-corrective if the self is awake and doing it. Karma brings us things and we go, oh no, I'm not putting up with this. We don't self-correct. We go the other way to extremes. So it's not self-corrective unless we make that effort.
Each individual. And there's where we get, there is a part of our nature that we do know. We've had situations, certain periods of our lives where things have happened and we're involved in something and we know everything's going right. It's like someone's there with a clicker, click, this happens and this happens and this happens and this happens. And it's like there's no interference, everything's going fine. That is a good expression of what karma is, if it's unbalanced. And those are the times that we shouldn't question anything, when things are just going right along, clicking along. These are lessons to be learned. We're not here because of our purification or of our knowledge. We're here to learn lessons that we have been through many lifetimes, the same lessons, and we have not learned the correctness of it, the balance of it, the harmony, call it what you wish. Yes.
Well, if we say that we can't correct nature, that if we poison a body of water and then that's it, then that's a very hopeless way to think about things. Lake Erie was considered dead. And we remember in the 60s and 70s, considered dead, lifeless. Well, it's been brought back to life. The Cuyahoga River used to catch fire in Cincinnati. That has been brought back to life. We can reclaim nature. It is possible. We're doing a lot of damage, obviously, but we can work with nature to reclaim nature. Otherwise, it would be hopeless. It would be like, well, that's it.
That's very true with that attitude, but we think all of a sudden it's not too late. All of a sudden, people are getting conscious of what we're doing to this planet. And all the things that depend on this planet, not just the human being, but every unit of intelligence that's on this planet. And if it keeps up and people continue to think like this, we have a chance to make amend, shall we say, of the mess we've made of this beautiful planet. Way in the back.
Yes. Hold on for one second.
Okay.
I wanted to ask, could you give us a little bit more information on those that are described as those shiny ones, whom the fifth, sixth, and seventh principles are awake? That's at the bottom of the first page.
Oh, the self-shining ones, yes.
Right.
In whom the fifth and sixth and seventh are all awake. Well, just as we know that we're where we are now, shall we say, in school, we've gone from, you know, preschool to kindergarten, up to the middle grades, up into college, up into degrees. We're way, way up here. We've got all these degrees. We've gained all this knowledge. But then again, at the same point, to those who are still down in preschool and kindergarten and grade school, we probably look like, you know, saints up here with knowledge. There are, and there has been, since the very beginning, if we could say beginning, of any evolutionary period, there are always those who have already gained knowledge in previous periods of evolution and have gained the knowledge and the wisdom that is needed that are sort of the forerunners of entering onto any new scene of evolution. So there comes guidance that knows from experience and from practice these are the ways to go. So eventually we are working our way towards the idea, there is the true idea of perfectibility. We all have that. But there's perfectibility up to extent and to a limit in any degree, then you either move on to other things that will always be there to be perfectible. So it's an ongoing cyclic process that there will always be those who know to be able to help their younger brothers in any system or time of evolution. So those that are talking of the sixth and the seventh are far more advanced. We are still, you know, the fourth type. We're four and a half, we're there, three and a half. Yes.
Is there a point where, is there a point to be reached where all that has, that can be learned is learned and there's no further to go?
Is there a point that all can be reached and there's no place further to go? The philosophy and the ancient teachings have told us no, because you get to any great point of perfection, there's always something else to know. And it's just like when we're trying to learn something and we're questioning, there's always more questions that we can come up with than answers that we don't have. So there's always going to be an ongoing development of perfection in general. There's a perfection of a certain time and of, let's say, quality of wisdom, but then there's always more that has to be learned. So it's never ending. Yes.
But isn't there a certain amount of knowledge to be learned in this evolutionary period? And if we are fortunate enough to get to that point, isn't there rest then for that soul or coming back to work to help mankind until the next evolutionary period? Or do they move into the next evolutionary period?
Those individuals who get to the point where, let's say, we're all aware of a Buddha, a Krishna, a Christ. We're all aware of those individuals who probably spent many lifetimes in that one direction to, at one lifetime, flower into the perfection that they knew and had. For anyone in this time period who is working, because they say in this round that we're in going through now of evolution, there are present on this planet six, we would call them six rounders, that are more developed than we are, that are here, that are still, because it's an overblending. It's not just boom, we stop with this fourth, we go to the fifth, then we go to the sixth and seventh. It's constantly an overblending of newness of coming in and a newness of going on. Because in any great time period of evolution, there is a limit to the amount of intelligence that's going to be working through the human frame. There is a limit. And when that great time period is over, we go into a rest period. And then eventually we'll come again, another cycle of evolving around our planet and going. So it's, we're coming down from pure spirit, working our way into the densest matter, which we are at now, and then we're working our way back up, and hopefully we're taking any knowledge that's worthwhile we're gaining becomes ours, and we're taking it with us again as we continue on that whole great period of evolution. Yes.
What we're talking about is ourselves, that we are these fifth rounders and sixth rounders. We will be them if we run on now. But those who have like Buddha and Shoni, have forced themselves forward, you know, through self-sacrifice and work. And but that there is a natural unfolding of our minds, of our intellect, of our feeling nature, of our intuition, which will be opening as we move forward into the next round, the next great race. So there is a natural unfolding of all these qualities. That's why this philosophy has been presented to us, so that we know what's happening. That we will see people with psychic abilities and all these powers and so forth, because it's the natural unfoldment of human nature. So, you know, so the choices are being made now, either to help humanity or not to help humanity, or help, be selfish. But as we, as the mind opens, that choice will be made consciously in the next great race. And we're sowing the seeds now for that future.
And the seeds we've already previously sown in lives before on what direction we're going. So this is very true. This idea of these seeds, we have a part of our nature that is sort of like the storehouse of all knowledge we have previously gained in other lives and other times. You can look at your character today and sort of get an idea of what you think you might have learned in the past. And one doesn't know that when you look into a crowd of people, who knows the miser that we might see. This might be the last thing this individual has to learn to balance, that he's already gained so much knowledge, but he still had some karmic things to work out, and it might be that. So you never can really get the idea of judging others. And you really can't judge yourself because you don't have that much knowledge at this time. We're behind where we should be in a way as mind thinkers, but as it says, in the next great period of evolution, the mind will be at its highest. And there we will possibly be living more on as individuals rather than personalities.
And the person we're judging as a miser, they might be actually very self-sacrificing and
right,
putting it away for a cause that they have in mind, where they may not be able to directly affect the change themselves. But you read about it from time to time. People leave $1 million, $2 million behind, and they give it all to their favorite cause. So they sacrifice their whole life working and being self-sacrificing. Other people might have looked at them as peculiar or miserly, but they could have contributed to an educational fund for the disadvantaged. You never know.
And that's one of the main reasons we think that the philosophy tells us you have no right to judge another. You may judge only yourself, and judge not so much the act is the actor. So you judge yourself. Yes.
Well, the first paragraph mentioned it. Every atom becomes a visible complex unit. Then it states the monadic essence passes into all of those kingdoms become man. However, this shows us that there is an animal man. That is a superior form of life, but still an animal. There's something else required to gain what is called individuality.
And that missing link,
yes,
is when the thinker enters onto the scene.
As an individual oneself, but we have the opinion that the personality that we see in the mirror, that was the most important thing, and that selfishness was permissible in a sense, survival according to one theory. But it seems here, what is being explained, there we would still be animal men if it wasn't for the work of others.
Or if you look at the idea of the thinker actually incarnating into the form and bringing self-consciousness, the thinker can choose, I want to do this, I want to do that, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do this. The other kingdoms cannot choose. It states, you know, everything's like under natural impulse. It's that thinker that enters the scene that makes the difference. And the idea that we look in the mirror, we think this is who and what we are. There was a time period, in earlier time periods, when there was the innocence of shall we say, innocence, purity. And it then got more complex, and we started to look to outside effects rather than to inside knowledge. And those outside effects became very important to us. And so the personality got stronger and stronger and stronger. And for some, it's very strong in this lifetime and period. There are those who can have the knowledge to know that there is some duality within them. There is where do these altruistics, these universal type ideas come within our mind? Where does the idea of, you know, selflessness that sometimes we feel within a situation, where does that come from? What is that? That is part of that higher nature that we really are, and we've built with this human body, this personality, and it's taken over. And for the higher and truer nature that we really are to get through, we have to start to work and control our lower natures, our senses, our desires, our wants, our dislike. These are the things that we need to make judgment of. And not so much what I should have said or I should have did this. We need to get to the point where we will know. We won't even go through that. We just know this is the right thing to do. We do have these times, we get them maybe in little periods where we just know this is the right thing to do, and we just automatically let it go through without putting any labels on it. As soon as we start labeling, boom, we're out of it. Way in the back.
This idea of lighting up a mind, the mythological root of that is the idea of Lucifer, isn't it?
Lucifer. And, I can't think of the other one.
Prometheus.
Thank you. Prometheus spout of, you know, bringing that lighting up of mind. And the thing of it is, we could call them mindless beings as part of this human form coming up. And it was on the level of almost instinctual things. But then when that thinker of what we really are, that is the reincarnating ego, when we entered onto the scene, that's when it no longer was the mindless. Once that enters, this is all the development that has moved on since, is that thinker, which we are. But sometimes we've let outside things do our thinking for us, where we have to really, it's not somebody else's writing or somebody else's words, it's got to be ours. And that's the idea of once we learn something and we know it, nothing can take it away. It becomes innate within us. Yes.
Well, we've been talking about the three qualities on Wednesday night, and that nature is permeated by these three qualities. So nature in itself is only shows these three qualities of inactivity, activity, and the bliss of some kind of. So therefore, nature is not vicious. Nature is not hateful. Nature is not cunning. It is man who is cunning in all these things. So when we say animal man, there's no such thing, because man is a distinct classification, distinct kingdom. It is not the animal kingdom, it is the human kingdom. So the human form, you know, as you had said, is sort of cloaked in darkness because it has not been lit up or reawakened into its true nature. But still, we are the ones that influence all of nature by our very thinking. Even though we think, now we think beyond the human form, but before then, we only thought of this human body, selfishness, is what permeated our being. And therefore, you know, all these hatefulness, the separateness, all these things that are our human nature that's hurtful to another.
Is on the human form.
Is on the humans.
Right. But when we say, but when we speak of it, as the teaching tells us, prior to that, that mindless animal, human, as they call it, and even in the ocean we speak of, we have a bit of that within us, that human part and that animal part of our nature and our action. But the fact of is very true. We are the ones that made all this separateness and all this selfishness in prevalence that it is today.
It's just the very first paragraph of our part today. Is that every atom becomes a visible complex unit, a molecule. And once attracted into the sphere of terrestrial activity, the monadic essence, passing through the mineral, vegetable, and animal kingdoms, becomes man. Becomes man. So man is a distinct kingdom.
Of its own.
Of its own.
Very much so, yes.
Now, we have to be careful of the use of words. When we refer to animals, we have to not think of tigers, elephants, cats, and dogs, and because when we do that, then we're going to apply our thinking along those lines when we are reading or trying to get an idea of what this means. So, might we just simply say animated being? And then have some idea of what animation is. Because if not, we're going to think of jungle beasts per se and apply that to the human beings.
We understand what you're saying too, but as we're saying, even in the philosophy, the term is used. And Mr. Judge uses it as a division. And that's in the early development, in other words, not thinking, just doing because it's there to be done, is the big difference. The thinker can decide, I'm not doing it because it's there to be done. Whereas in the lower kingdoms, there's no decision. Yes.
At the bottom of the first paragraph on page 2, it talks about how we vibrate. Atoms, each atom has a certain
vibration.
Rate of vibration, it forms a layer of consciousness, and it works in that state of matter. And then the intelligence and experience of one being is shared by the whole, so there all is connected. We see that where all the kingdoms are connected, all seven kingdoms. Of course, there's kingdoms above us as well. But on this earth, we are at the spearhead of evolution. It's really for our evolution, but also we are impelling the other lives. We want to make it easier for them if we can, not harder, and work against them. And then when we work against the lower kingdoms, that's where the elementals, which not a lot is talked about in the philosophy, but there's the three kingdoms below the mineral, the elemental kingdoms, which are not visible at all, but that's what affects these great cataclysms, is how we impel those blind forces of nature, is the best way to put it. They are impelled by us, and they can either be beneficial or they can
be destructive,
wreak havoc. And we're just curious, though, human elementals, we don't normally see it stated as such. What are human elementals. It almost sounds like we're confused about that.
Now, that's something I did not understand either, because we don't normally use that in that term. We know that the three that are below the mineral that we don't see, we can affect these elementals. But as far as the elementals within us, we could not find anything on looking into it, either in the SD, or could we find anything in ISIS? Yes. The skandhas are your qualities that are yours that you bring back, good or bad. You can bring back good skandhas and you can bring back bad. I don't know. That might be something else. There might be someone else who might know of some reference on it. But I do know the skandhas, these are your attributes, good or bad. They are yours, and in each lifetime, until they're resolved, they're going to show up, either small or a lot. But the fact is, they just become part of your karma to come. And so we're not quite sure with that. And we do know that after checking out enough stuff, that the whole idea is that every atom, even the atom, is alive. And it has the germ within it of self-consciousness in time. So there is nothing that is really left out of the whole picture of evolving. Everything is in a progressive mode. And it's true, we owe responsibility to the lower kingdoms, and we affect them. Look at your body. Look at the growth of an infant, the phases it goes through, and look at all the different things you have within you as far as mineral, vegetable, animal. We have all the kingdoms within us, and we affect them just in our way of thinking. Even when we eat, we are affecting the lives that come in through the foods that we're going to digest, and how we feel and act during that part of when we're eating, for instance, can color the lives that we've eaten and we're going to digest. Yes.
If you go back for a moment, a question was asked. It's on the bottom of the first sheet. It states that the monad has risen to a point where its fifth principle, or mind, can be aroused by those self-shining ones in whom the fifth, sixth, and seventh are all awake. It is only in the actual midway round, before three are now, that man, and then this is quoted, develops in himself entirely the fourth principle as a fit vehicle for the fifth. So the fourth vehicle is our desires, our passions. And we have to develop that.
I think we've overdeveloped it to a certain point. In the wrong way. I mean, it's like they've just taken over.
Right. Well, what is it that we need to develop in ourselves that we not work with? If we're developing this aspect of our passions and desires too much, what are we neglecting? What should we be devoting our time to develop that fourth principle, which is
again
our compassion?
Yes. Again, who's in control? Is it our likes, our dislikes, our wants, our not wants? Or is there a part of our nature that stands like a balancer? And we need to have the ability to weigh a situation, because everything, every act that we do, it all comes first in the mind. And then eventually it is acted out. We have let these desires and our senses of this physical form take over. And we really, on majority of time, do not make judgments on our acts. And that deals with, it's because what the I wants, the I needs, the me wants, the me needs, whether we get to the point where we understand we have to be in control of our actions. And a lot of it stems from that idea of what do we desire and how do we use the principle of desire.
Well, the irony is that when we satisfy our desires, we're not satisfied.
That's right, it's more. It's like a never-ending situation because we're desiring it on a very temporary basis. God, I want that chocolate cake now. I've got to have it. And later in the evening when you have a headache and a stomach ache and it's you don't feel too well, you think, did I really eat that much of that chocolate cake? Did I need it? We're too much. We need to be able to balance before we go into something.
Well, that's why we need to have higher desires that are for universal. They're not separative. They're not just for the lower self. They're something that benefit everyone. And if we have those desires, well, we're going to have a lot of work to do, but that's good because we're never going to, it's going to be a long time before we reach the end of that. And then, you know, it takes seven races circling seven rounds, seven times seven cycling, and then at the end of that, then I guess we can rest and say we're satisfied.
or sort of, yes, in the back.
So that would be taking a passion attached to the lower and changing it into compassion, and then we know it's of a higher nature because it's usually to help someone other than ourselves.
And I think the philosophy, there's so many times that they pointed out, you know, to think of the idea of think of others. If you're in a really rotten, bad mood, think of something nice you can do for somebody else. Get it off yourself. Spread it out. And it does make a difference if one tries it to get that feeling out completely. And we've all had those compassion times, not 24/7, but we know what it's like, and we miss it when it's not there. But the idea is we have to be in control. Yes?
As far as the desires go, there are many who say that all desires are only mirror reflection of our primal desire, which is the reabsorption back into the universal mind and the bliss that brings with us, which is the highest form of happiness. But we seek that when we seek through food, through activity, through alcohol or drugs or whatever it is that we do, it is a poor substitute that cannot scratch that particular itch, but it is the only way that we know at that time.
And it does have to come from the mind. It has to be what we think. What is our attitude about something? Do we question it? Probably for most, no. We just go with it. So the fact, when we say the idea of self-conscious man, when you think about it, that holds a lot of responsibility to be a self-conscious being. And we still are only in shades of what a true self-responsibility is. We have to work on it.
Well, it's rather maybe it's ironic that we're studying the Gita right now in the summertime, but that's the remedy. That's our only remedy, is to live a life always searching for that highest in our nature. But, you know, be unattached to our labors, you know. Do that which needs to be done. And be single-minded. I mean, the formula is there. It's where our desires are placed.
And that's why we, as thinking human beings, we are the ones that can make the difference. Each one, first of himself, and then through all. So hopefully we'll see you next Sunday because we're going into part two of this individuality. Classes. Okay.